first question, what is the number one element you include in every email? Some things I try and include in most or all my emails is including something of value. It may be a new interview. It may be a gift, something for free. It may be something like entertainment. I want to try for each one of my emails to establish a little bit of trust and try to get the reader to like me a little bit, because people buy from people they like, know, and trust. When I'm doing email marketing, we're doing all of those things at the same time.
The only thing I'm really cautiously putting in every single email is I got to put something in there that makes the email fun to read. And it doesn't have to be this giant slapstick comedy thing. It doesn't even have to be a joke. It just has to be fun. And it could be a word that makes it fun. It could be a concept that makes it fun. It could be a combination of words that just makes it interesting and fun. I'll give you a real life example. Last night I wrote an email for today and I was making fun of the law of reciprocity. And I called it the law of narciprocity, playing off the condition of people who are narcissists. You know, I got a lot of feedback from that this morning. People got a kick out of that. It sounds stupid, but by making it fun every time, you're going to almost guarantee that people are going to want to open it again the next time. Whether they were even interested in what you're offering or not, they'll just keep opening it just to see what you're up to.
Yeah, what kind of response did you get from it, as an example?
One person was saying how he reads every email I send out. And he goes, it doesn't even matter. He goes, I don't even care what you're selling and if you want to pitch me or anything. He goes, I just find it so fun to read your emails. That was something I actually got yesterday. That's kind of typical of what I get. And now, if I wasn't making sales, none of this would matter. I would not recommend doing it. But I get consistent sales all the time, you know, for various products. And I attribute it just to making it fun to read. I mean, people are not creating content anymore. They were back maybe in the late 90s and all that, early 2000s. Now, content is a dime a dozen. Anybody can go on easyarticles.com and get content. What they're not getting is a good experience. They're not really having fun reading emails anymore. They're not enjoying it. It's just it's all business or it's all content or it's all straight sales pitch and nobody actually takes the time to engage them and kind of make it the highlight of their day. And that's kind of what I try to do. I go, what can I say today to be a highlight of somebody's day? And it seems to be working pretty good.
What words should you avoid in your email? I'm thinking words that are going to keep your emails from actually getting through. So certainly there's some words in there that you don't want to include in your headlines that will block your emails.
For some reason, I rarely get flagged on Spam Assassin, and even when I think I've gone too far. So I don't know if that means there's Spam Assassin and AWeber needs to be updated or what, but other than that, I actually try not to do a lot of profanity. For one thing, I just think it's unnecessary. Once in a while, a well-placed profanity can work pretty well. I've done it before, but some people go overboard on it, and they do that because they see certain gurus doing it. Oh, that guy's swearing like a sailor, so that must be what works. I don't recommend that. I think you have to understand who your audience is. If you're writing to a bunch of 17-year-old high school kids watching Beavis and Butthead all day, fine, go ahead. But most people who are buyers are normal people, you know? I mean, yeah, sure, when the hammer slips or the car slips off the jack, they're going to probably yell out a four-letter word, and they understand that when you do it, if there's a context to it. But I guess I just want to throw that out. There's a warning. You see a lot of people just swearing just for the sake of it without any real reason.
It's hard to tell literally how many of your emails are going into a junk folder. You just don't know.
And this goes back to before. That's why you got to make sure your emails are something people look forward to, because if they're not getting it, they'll look for it. They'll look in their junk folder. I got to get my fix with Michael Senoff today. Where is it? They might even email you. Are you still sending emails? I haven't gotten anything. I mean, if you're doing it right, you're going to have people seeking you out, not necessarily forgetting about you.
Michael, how do you get your ideas for your emails? They're always fun to read, and they're so creative. What are your tricks for getting such cool ideas? This is like writer's block with most people. At any one given time, there are stories and there are things going on all around you. So you're never going to be short of ideas. I get ideas from my life. A couple days ago, I was down at the bay, and, you know, I've been running down there for years and years, and I saw this guy. He had a cowboy hat, and he had a lasso, and he was practicing his lassoing on this wood horse. And along the beautiful San Diego Bay, it was a real odd vision, seeing a cowboy down in the San Diego Bay practicing with his lasso. And I ran past him twice and didn't say anything. And this next time I went running, I saw him again. I go, you know what? There's got to be a story behind this guy. So I passed him on my run, and then on the way back, I stopped and I walked up to him. And I said, hey, are you a real cowboy? And he goes, well, that depends on what you think a real cowboy is. And his name was Ben, and I started talking to him, and he told me he was practicing his lassoing for this, I don't know what the exact sport was. It's for cattle ranching. You know, when you're on a horse and you got to lasso the back feet of a cow and you got to get him down on his side so you can brand them. So this is what the cowboys did, so they can brand the cattle. Well, this is a sport that's really popular. And he started telling me all about it. He told me it originated from the Spaniards, and they used to practice their lasso rope on a pole that stood 13 feet, and there's 50 different throws you can do. So the point is, you go through your day, you know, it could be, you know, how you make your coffee in the morning, or I do stories about my kids. You know, it's just being observant and looking for unique stories, things that happen. Maybe when I took my kids to Walmart and, you know, he wanted to buy a toy. I mean, I've got all kinds of stories with my kids. He wanted to buy a toy and I didn't want to buy it for him. And he's like, Dad, just tell me what you want. And then when you're looking for stories and you're listening for these things, I just say, that's a story right there. And I'll take my little toy phone and I'll make some notes and I'll type in, tell me what you want. So they are appearing all the time if you're looking for them. And they start out as just ordinary things that you're doing. So you got to look in your life and what's going on in your life and be aware and be observant, and you'll have plenty of stories to come up with. Now, connecting the stories into an email that works is something I'm sure we'll be talking about here in the next few questions. Ben, how do you get ideas for some of your emails?
I have like an antenna that's always up, and I'm always actively looking for ideas now. And even today, more so than ever, because now I'm writing for two different lists, depending on what day it is, sometimes three or four different lists and articles and all this other stuff. So I just have to have ideas all the time. Everything in real life is an idea. In fact, one of the best things somebody can do if they want to get good at this is just look around wherever their office is, wherever they do their work at. Just sit there one day and try to come up with a story for every object in your office. Everything has a purpose and a function, and you could just tell the story about how you came upon that printer, what books you have on your shelf. It could be anything. What your dog is doing right now, is he laying in the corner? I mean, everything is a story. And ironically, and this is a good and a bad thing, anything bad that happens to you is always an email story. I don't care how bad it is, you need to write about it. For one thing, you'll feel better afterwards. And for another thing, you're going to tap into people's minds in a way that nobody else is, because you're sharing something painful with them that you've gone through, that they've probably gone through or afraid of going through. You know, it's like any good movie where you're watching a character get into a problem and work themselves out of it. There's a lot of drama in just something simple like that. And so, yeah, just real life. I swear, I've written about just about every stupid thing I can. I wrote an email about how I farted in study hall once.
Why do you explain the power of stories and why stories, you know, are so different than everything else everybody's getting, and why do you think they're so effective?
They're effective because neurologically, it's the easiest way for humans to communicate with each other. I mean, if you think about it, there's stories that have been around for 2,000 years that people can recite, like the Christmas story. People who aren't even Christians and don't celebrate Christmas can probably tell you the Christmas story because it's just been passed along, word of mouth, word of mouth. I once heard the story about how the Native American Indians, how they passed stories for like 15,000 years, all word of mouth. That's like the easiest way for somebody to remember something, and it's a great way for somebody to kind of have their mind open to what you have to say and to remember. It's a good way to prove your case, especially if you're just kind of new at what you're doing and you want to give yourself some credibility, tell a story.
Was it Jerry Spence, that trial attorney, and he had just an unbelievable winning record?
Yeah, in fact, that was what he said. When he would write briefs, most people would write these boring legal briefs, he would write briefs that were actually kind of interesting, and the judges, I think, liked them. But even besides that, when he was given his opening and closing statements and doing his thing, he would tell stories. He wouldn't just tell the facts. He would put the facts in a story, and it's extremely powerful. It's simple, but it's very powerful.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Yeah, another good idea is photographs. If you've got a bunch of pictures, you know, digital pictures, every single one of those pictures has a story attached to it as well.
And every person in that story is a different cast member with their own story. I mean, really, it never ends. And this is why I think it's important to write every day or almost every day, because you just get really good at it after a while, and it just becomes second nature. I mean, you did this. I mean, you just start writing emails all the time, and all of a sudden you're just pumping stories out like crazy.
One of the hardest things, I think, for people to do, and I don't know if this is for you, you got to say, okay, screw it, I'm going to do it. But I think people may be hesitant to start writing every day because they don't want their readers to know that much about them. And I'm trying to get my sister to start doing email. She's got a list of several thousand customers and clients in the specialty advertising business. And I wrote her up an email and she said, Michael, it just sounds too salesy. But what she's really worried about, she was worried about looking silly and looking foolish. And I think anyone who's considering doing that, that is an obstacle that they're going to have to just deal with and overcome. And after they do it for a while, you're not even going to think twice about it.
You know, the way around that is to just write an email that is extremely personal and just send it out and just do it once. And then you'll realize that nobody really is laughing at you or anything. In fact, they probably respect you more. I mean, you won't know you've gone too far until someone tells you. I just wrote an email yesterday for another list that I'm doing, and I read this to my wife, and even she thought I was crazy. She's used to me writing about stupid things. And I wrote about how I started taking a certain supplement, and also I had a wet dream that night. So I wrote about it. Most people would not think to share something like that, but to the market I'm selling to, believe me, they will find that intensely interesting. Not because it happened to me, but because it's just part of what they're going through right now, the pain they're going through. And you can get personal. Don't worry about it. I mean, the worst that happens is you go too far. Some people, I can't even imagine going too far, actually. I've never gone too far. I've never said, gee, I wish I hadn't done that. And I do this every day. So chances are you'll never go far enough. So just don't worry about it.
Yeah, and if you do that, you're going to bond with people on an emotional level, and that's also what this is really about. You know, it's not just surface promotions and things that really have no meaning. When you're sharing something about yourself or about your kids or how you love them or, you know, something personal and emotional, these are people on the other end, and they have the same and similar life experiences, and you're going to bond with them, and you're going to build a trust, and that's what we're trying to do with our list. You're trying to build up a trust and a bond where, like you say, they can't wait for that daily fix of Ben Settle or Michael Senoff's email just to see what he has to say.
You're not guaranteeing they're going to be more sane after they read your email, but, you know, they'll have a good time.
That's true. How do you develop content that is informational and does not just sell? We're always selling. We may not do an email and at the end of the email direct them or ask them to buy your product or your service, but it may be an email that is designed to, like we said, bond with your reader. It may be a personal story that has no call to action to buy anything. But you are selling, you're building some trust, and you're bonding, and that may be the purpose of that email. I may do an email that's like for today. You know, I've been promoting a marketing consulting system for the last 4 days straight using my daily emails, but today I didn't do it. I had an interview with Brian Tracy, and so I just sent out Brian Tracy interview, new. And it wasn't selling anything. It was just, here's a new interview with Brian Tracy. Okay, so what am I actually selling? I'm selling, hey, Michael Senoff's got a new interview, and it's a good interview with a pretty big name guru who's been around for a long time. I even included a story in there how he was a mentor to me, and I used to listen to him every time I'd drive from Atlanta up to the University of Alabama and back because I had his tape set, and The Psychology of Persuasion was my favorite tape set. So I included a little story before I sent the interview in the email. So you can do emails that aren't just selling. So you can send emails to content, to interviews, to articles. It could be an email about something newsworthy, a new TV show you're watching, entertainment, like what you said earlier. So you don't have to sell in all your emails. But every email should have some kind of purpose.
I'm probably a lot more aggressive with the sale than you are. I'm actually more aggressive than probably most people. I'm not as aggressive as some guys are, like Matt Fury or anything, but I think the question is kind of backwards. I think it should be more like, how do you sell, and it's not just information? Because at the end of the day, every email should be, like you said, selling something. I think there should be a link to something that you're selling in it somewhere. Doesn't have to be blatant. Doesn't even have to be a call to action. You could just mention the product, put the link in mid-sentence, and then just carry on with the rest of your email. But this question really reminded me of the Jim Cant interview you have on your website, which he's talking about you're always safe when you're in your prospect's world. Whether you're pitching something or not, if you're in their world talking about their problem, it's informational. It may not be teaching, and I don't think people should do a lot of teaching anyway, but it's informational. I'll give you a real-life example. You and I have been doing these joint ventures a couple times a year with the Eugene Schwartz product. And the email that always gets a lot of sales, and so far like the 3 times I've used it, is when I tell the story about how I used that course just, you know, to improve my life. I mean, and it was a real life story. I had listened to it at a time when I was just starting out and I didn't have any clients or anything. You and I were doing those joint venture deals. And really every ad, I mean, if it didn't make money, I wouldn't have gotten paid anything. And those Eugene Schwartz at least the one interview you had was like huge. I mean, I listened to it over and over and over, and I told that story. It didn't teach them anything, but it was very informational, and it was selling.
I remember that because I remember looking at the sales that came in, and that one had a lot of sales. I think it was the first one. The one seminar that saved my life or something was the headline.
Yeah, the $20 seminar that saved my business. It's a story that everybody who's in that position can relate to. People love to hear about their symptoms, so to speak. You know, they love to hear about other people who went through the challenges that they're going through now and how they got through it. And you're not doing them a disservice by selling them. You're doing them a favor. I mean, they want you to give them the solution. They want to know how you got out of it so they can too.
Well, maybe the guy asking this question or the person asking this question, maybe he worded the question this way because he's afraid to sell, or he's selling from his heels, or he's afraid that his list doesn't want to be sold. Do you know what I'm saying?
I think that's a huge mistake to have that mindset, because of course they want to be sold. They've opted in because they have a problem they need solved, and you're not doing them any favors by not selling your solution to them. What's that old adage? Don't tell me about your weed killer. Tell me about my crabgrass, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody who's got crabgrass and weed, you cannot tell them enough. You cannot talk to them too much about their problem, about their weeds and their crabgrass. By the time you're done talking to them, they are so hot for some solution to that problem. If you don't give them that solution, you have absolutely done them a disservice. That's the way you got to look at it.
All right. What does your testing reveal about using personalization in email? For example, first name fix. That's when you have the first name in the subject line or wherever you want to have the first name of the reader in your email content. Does it always improve open rates, or do people see this as a marketing gimmick? I do use the first name in some headlines of some emails. I don't use it in all of them. Well, now on my website, when I'm capturing emails and now only asking for an email because I find I get more people who subscribe, I don't even ask for a first name. So the first name isn't that important to me. I think it adds some personalization. Everyone does like to see their first name, but it could be overused as well. So I don't have a specific answer for that. How about you, Ben?
Honestly, I never use their first name. I do in my bensettle.com list. I use it in the salutation just to say, you know, Michael or whatever their first name is. I actually agree with you. I'm starting with this other niche I'm going into. I don't even ask for their first name anymore. I don't see the point. Maybe it was a novelty in the 90s, you know, like a big deal, but I don't know. It's like it just seems pointless to me, but I've never tested it, so I wouldn't say necessarily do what I'm doing. I have not tested it.
Do you get better results with text, email, or HTML? I think text is the way to go. And the number one reason is, with all these mobile devices out there, I know that a text email is going to get through and it's going to be easily read. If you have one of the maybe older mobile phones or text-based phones, with an HTML email, you may not be able to get your message through. And I know there's more and more people reading their emails on their mobile phones. So for that reason, and the simplicity and the look of it, I like text. I don't think you can go wrong with a text email. Ben, do you get better results with text email or HTML?
I have found to be the same. Just from a personal point of view and just from what I've seen, I think plain text is better. You will get people, though, and I've had long debates about this with people. How can you test your open rates? How can you test your click-throughs? I don't care about my open rates or click-throughs. I'm like the lone wolf in the wilderness when I say this, but I honestly think if you want to test those things, fine, use HTML. I test sales. If something brought in sales, I know it was a good email. If it didn't, then I probably don't want to repeat what I did. And the thing with plain text is it looks like a regular email. I didn't tell you this, but sometimes when you send me a real email, I have to scroll down to see if there's an AWeber thing. Oh, is this a real email or is this something he sent to his list? Because it's plain text. It doesn't look like commercial email.
Right. It looks like a personal email. That's correct. When you say real email, you're saying it looks like a personal email, something that is not broadcast. For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
Yeah, and I have a friend named Jim Yagi. He does this really good. He's not even like a trained writer or anything, but he doesn't use a first name or anything. He'll just write like it's an email he dashed off. I swear, I have to like scroll down to see if I see the eye contact. Sometimes I have to see, is this real or is he writing to me personally? And man, when you can get to that point, you are going to have people reading your emails top to bottom, and you're just going to make more sales if you're selling something.
Should the email be short or long for the best results?
generally speaking, I like to make mine short, not because I think it necessarily is better or worse. I'm in a hurry, you know. I don't want to spend all day writing an email, and I know people don't want to spend all day reading an email. People have very short attention spans, so to me, the ideal length of an email is about 250 words. I am always trying to get it under 300, but always for sure under 400 words. That's just my personal thought on it. Now, that doesn't mean long ones don't work. I have written long ones, if that's what it takes to tell the story, that have done extremely well and failed. Here's the way I heard it. I think this is the perfect way of explaining it. Treat it like a woman's skirt, okay? You want it long enough to cover the details, but short enough to get your attention.
Just imagine if you're having a conversation with someone one-to-one. How long should a story be in a social situation? Usually, it's probably pretty short. If you keep going on and on, you're going to be known as a talker, you know, that you don't shut up. But there are certain emails that you can go super long. Now, Ben, you gave me an idea, maybe when I'm sending out an interview, to include the entire transcripts in the email. And I've done that. And there's a great reason to do that. So for the people who are on their mobile phones or who are in front of their computers, and instead of saying, hey, here's a great interview with this marketing expert, click here, or here's a great interview with this marketing expert, and here's all 30 pages of the word-for-word transcript, if you give it to them all right there in that text email, that just increases your chance for him to start diving into the content of that transcript, because people are still lazy enough where they don't want to click on the button to go to the web page. So I think there's room for both. You just got to test it, and it all depends on what you're trying to accomplish. How do you find what relevant topics to write about every day? What you really have to start thinking about, I don't think collecting the stories are going to be a problem, but I think the transition from that story into what you want to sell is where most people get hung up. So, for example, my sister took a crack at writing a story how when she was in Vegas, she was walking the largest trade show for the specialty advertising industry. This was last week. And her knee was killing her. It was swollen. It took her 7 hours to walk the trade show floor. She didn't take any bathroom breaks. She didn't take a lunch break. And then while everyone else was partying in Vegas that night, she was up in her room going through all her little catalogs, and she felt like a nerd and a loser. But the point is, she wrote all that, which was great. She could articulate her story. But then at the very end, she goes, now here's where I get stuck. And where she was getting stuck is the transition from the story into the product or into the call to action or into what you're trying to actually do. Are you trying to sell something? Are you trying to get someone to click on a link?
You know, you can get relevant topics just by keeping in touch with popular culture. What's on the Drudge Report or your favorite news site? Every headline is a different email in waiting. What are people complaining about in your industry today? I once wrote an email about SideWiki, which is like people are signing into Google, they can comment on your website, and it's kind of like graffiti, they can sit there and call you names or whatever, and people see it, so it was like people are making a big deal out of it, so I wrote about it. Just your favorite TV show. Every week you see your favorite TV show, turn that into an email. Turn it into some relevant lesson or something. Really, it's endless. Look at what's trending on Twitter, what's on Yahoo News. All these sites, all these TV shows, all these news reports are all relevant topics that people are talking about around the water cooler. And if you can find what people are complaining about, you'll never run out of stuff. If you find what people are complaining about, you are the ultimate email writer, because really, when it comes down to it, email is just talk radio on glass. That's all it is. You're just talking, just like a talk radio show host would complain about something to their audience. They all agree, and they're all nodding, and they're all getting mad together. That's all it is. So don't get too hung up on the topics. I mean, really, that's the least of your concerns.
Where do you get the inspiration for your unique stories, and does the story motif play off better than a more fact-based presentation? You know, we've discussed all the stories. I get my inspiration from my day, from my kids, from my life, from my work, from, you know, headlines, from things that are newsworthy or that I just feel like writing about. And I think a story will be more easily read than something that's fact-based. You can include some facts, and in your story, you can do a little bit of both.
I think everybody listening to this should listen to your Jim Camp interview, the original one, because he nailed it when he says, it's all about vision, you know? You're not giving facts. You're not giving a PowerPoint presentation. You're getting in their world, talking about their problems and their frustrations. And, you know, you get into the facts and all that, but first let's get the problem on the table, or whatever it is that they want. Let's get that on the table. You have their interest. You have them wanting a solution. Then you give your facts. Now here's why you should try this. It all works out.
how do I write great emails in my voice and sound like someone else? So there are ways to do that, and that is to tune in to the voice of the person that they're writing for. Maybe they're writing for a marketing expert out there. Maybe that marketing expert has done interviews where you can listen to their interviews, or you can look at the transcripts of their interviews. And then if you have the transcripts of their interviews, you have their voice right there, and you can take from those transcripts and assemble a nice collection of emails from those transcripts. Maybe they've written a book. You can read their book, and you can pull the stories that they tell out of their book and use that as an email. I did this for a new series of questions with Jim Camp. I was looking through the transcripts of the interview, and this was a story that he told me when I interviewed him about how he first got his start in negotiation. When he was a child, 8 years old, he used to work on Mr. Waite's farm, and Mr. Waite taught him how to sell tomatoes and watermelons and cherries on the farm, and then Mr. Waite would take him over to the market at 1 a.m. in the morning and teach him how to negotiate. And then from then, Jim told the story about how he learned to negotiate to sell Christmas cards in July, and how to mow lawns, and how to earn extra money from neighbors in his neighborhood. So I just took his words and I just put quotations around it. So I wrote the email, but it was in Jim Camp's voice. And then I came back later in the email and directed the reader to do something. I had a call to action to go look at an additional 140-something questions that he answers in a series of interviews that I did with him. Hi, it's Michael Senoff, and if you like what you've been listening to in this 10-part series with Ben Settle on email, I want to introduce an incredibly advanced system on selling that can be used in your one-to-one phone call conversations, in all of your email correspondence, and or integrated into your written sales letters. Go to www.hardtofindseminars.com/HSOE.htm. Or you could just go to Google and search these words, the highest paid salesman on earth, and you'll find a link to an incredible product that will only enhance all your selling efforts, whether it's one-to-one phone conversations, emails, or in your sales letters. Check it out at hardtofindseminars.com/HPSOE.htm. This is the end of part one. Please continue to part two.